before I forget, because I will, just want to acknowledge that it's Donna and Dan's last meeting because their terms expire on March 1st. Donna has been a member of the Deferred Comp Board for how long?
I don't even know. I really didn't think this was my last meeting. I was super psyched to find that out.
I should have looked it up.
Yeah, let's just say probably decades. So
before,
and Dan is, we said at least
06?
Oh,
it has been a long time.
But Dan, are you how many years?
I think it's coming up on 9. 8 or 9.
Something like
that. 2011, okay. Wow.
That goes by really fast.
It does. So, I was going to say it was before.
Before ING?
Buck. No, ING was. I'm trying to think of. I came on right after we went from 1 to 2.
Oh, for ICMA.
Yeah.
Oh.
From 2 to 1. Mm-hmm. Oh, right around that time.
Can we talk a little bit about the replacement of trustees? Because I know the retirement department's had a difficulty, or the retirement board, excuse me.
Yeah.
So, and then we have OER is responsible for it, and they've already sent out a solicitation for both the openings.
There was an email.
Yeah, someone approached me, but they know I'm leaving. It's like, I'd love to stay, but I'm not willing to put 20 hours a week on my own time. So that's
your seat isn't.
And
for retirement.
Yeah, the retirement. There's a retirement position that's been open, and they've been looking for like at least 2 months now. Just a volunteer. Not you don't have to submit for the thing when you apply for like a political statement for oath.
Oh, Form 700.
Yeah, well, no, they apply for the as a trustee, submit it to the clerk. When you run in a political campaign, and you go through the election process, and then you're interviewed by the mayor and the council, and then they make the decision on who to appoint. Just asking for a volunteer, and it's very difficult. There are no takers, and my opinion, I think they need to get some of the folks here on their tier two involved in these boards. It's very important.
So, but I know there's an email out. Donna is a representative of the management groups, and your MEF CEO.
AFSCME.
So.
Yeah, I think they went out last week.
Yes, but I did recruitment, and I have a candidate.
Yeah, she's got some
candidate for you.
Good. Excellent.
So, Dan,
I'm trying to convince someone.
So, okay. So, with that, we'll start with item number one on the agenda is approval of the September 26th minutes. So,
Donna, motion to approve.
Okay. Go second. September 26th. September.
Oh, yeah. Is that the right date?
Does it say?
Oh, yeah, you're right. The meeting was on the 18th.
On the 18th. Oh. So can we correct the agenda? It says the 26th.
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
So the backup says the 18th. Oh, good catch.
Okay.
So I'm approving the minutes from September 18th, 2017.
Okay. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. That carries. Okay. Item number two is review and discuss and accept the deferred compensation plan's first quarter financials for fiscal 2017-18. So, good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, everyone. So, I'm Jennifer from Finance. I'm going to present the deferred compensation program activity reports for the quarter ended September 30, 2017. So next one. So we'll cover three topics: plan participation, plan assets, and administrative reimbursement fund. Next. For the plan participation, the first slide shows the number of participants and also the participation rate for the most recent 10 fiscal years. For this quarter, September 2017, the total participants was 3,536, and the participation rate was 69%, which is the same as last quarter. Next one. So this slide shows the employee profile by age. The blue curve represents the age group distribution of the city employee, and the red one, the pink one, represents the age group distribution for the plan participants. And we can see more than one third of the plan participants are actually in the age group 41 to 50, which is similar to the city employees. Next one. So this slide shows the employee profile by gender. We separate employees by two groups. The one on the left side is for the public safety employee, and the one on the right side is for the miscellaneous employee. For the public safety employee, about 93% of the participants are male, and for the miscellaneous employees, about 52% are male. Next one. This slide shows the quarterly contribution for the most recent five quarters. For this quarter, the total contribution about 8 million, increased by 1.2 million. The reason is we have one extra pay period in this quarter. So for the plan assets, next slide. So as of September 30, 2017, the total plan assets was 934 million, increased by about 31 million. The reason was for the investment earnings. We'll discuss a little bit later.
Looking for that billion number.
I know.
Getting close. Almost there. So this one shows the assets balance for each plan. For the 457 plan, as of September 2017, the plan had 920 million assets, and for the annuity, 1.6 million in annuities, and no receivable, 13.2 million. Next one. So this slide shows the historical investment earning. So for this quarter, the total earning was 29 million, so it's a pretty good quarter for this year, yeah. Next one. So this slide shows the contribution and withdrawal for the most recent five fiscal year. The contribution for this quarter was 8 million and the withdrawal was 3.4 million. So which, if we annualize the amount, which is kind of a little bit higher than last fiscal year. Next one. So this slide shows the roll-in and roll-out activity for the plan. So for this quarter, there were 28 accounts rolled out of the plan. The total amount was 3 million, decreased by 50% when compared to last quarter. So for the roll-in, we had 23 accounts rolled into the plan, and the total amount was $560,000. Next one. So this slide shows the fund assets allocation. About one quarter of the assets plan assets are invested in the assets allocation fund, which are 26% of the assets. The next one is the short-term investment fund, which are 25% of the assets. The third largest one is the large cap value fund, which had 15% of the plan assets. So those percentages are also consistent with the ones in prior quarter. So for the administrative reimbursement fund, so this fund, next one. So for this quarter, the total revenue was $163,000 and total expenditure was $150,000. So the year to date revenue and expenditure just a little bit over the budget by like 1%, yeah. Next one. So this last slide shows the changes in the administrative fund balance. So the fund balance we reported in the last quarter, in the September DCIC meeting, was $331,000. And after that, we had all the adjustments related to the personnel cost, about $10,000. So the true balance, beginning balance, was $320,000. So with this quarter revenue and expenditures, the ending fund balance increased by $13,000. So we have ending fund balance $334,000 as of September 2017. So that's the end of my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Anybody have any questions?
So this includes personnel costs. So was a position vacant, or is there a reason for the adjustment?
No, it's just there's adjustment. There was expenditure in the general fund. We normally move those to the administrative fund, but that one we didn't move it on time, so we kind of move it after the period 12 close. Then we actually move it later.
Any other questions? So do I have a motion to accept the report?
Motion to accept.
Okay, John, second.
Second.
David, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you very much, Jennifer. Okay, so number three is review and approve the watch list. It says no report.
No, that's it.
Item number four, review and discuss and approve the administrative fee recommendations and recommend refund of excess reserves. So, turn that over to Don.
Okay. The brief presentation should look like that. Why don't we start on the next page? And a while back, we went through pretty deep analysis on different types of reserve policies and the pros and cons of different types of rebate methodologies. It's key that you don't have a shortfall because it's hard to then go back and get additional dollars or change things retroactively, so it's better to have an excess and then deliver it back to the plan participants periodically. Today, I think it's pretty straightforward, but I do think based upon what decisions are made on the plan administration RFP process, we're going to have a different fee structure going forward for administration of the plan, and that would impact what we need in the structure. So I think we should make a decision today, but then put it on the March or following agenda to readdress where we stand. The so your reserve balance at the end of October was a little over $304,000. The proposed operating expenses for the year were, and obviously this changes year to year, but it was a little over $565,500. The target that we've had is one fourth of that plus $50,000 buffer, which would be the $191,382. So our recommendation is to return the difference between the reserve balance of a little over $304,000 and the target, with the difference being $112,629 to participants on the pro rata basis. And this is consistent with how we've done rebates in recent time. So the details on the following page, I would think when we readdress this, something that we've looked at in the past is if we're creating too much of an excess, do we change the fee structure and keep lowering it? And the trend has been to lower it over time whenever you can. So that would be readdressed. But the recommendations to return the $112,629. Questions?
Yeah, can you refresh my memory? Are we just doing the rebate once a year? Or okay, so this is the once a year look at?
Well,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We have we put in place the model of when we would look at it and when it got too large. So I guess if we had some big explosion, we could look at doing it again.
Yeah, and that's when I asked you, so I'm like, it's teetering, but then
okay,
it was the following meeting that we're doing this activity. So.
Okay.
So there's going to be a change in the fee structure. Is there, do we know what that is? And I guess And you already have like a safety valve in there if there's
yes.
too much, and then to return on that. So just, I agree with his assessment. Yeah, you don't want to have too little in there. So, but you know, it looks $190,000 looks prudent to me. I mean,
in terms of the fee structure, you haven't voted on who will be the plan administrator going forward, so until we vote on the fee structure, we don't know, or who it will be.
Would it make sense to just hold off and have that conversation and come back to this item?
It would take a whole nother assessment, I think. Yeah.
The intention was just to handle the participant reimbursement at this point,
okay.
And then next meeting we can look at adjusting fees. Because at this point we're not generating
okay.
way too much,
right.
But with a record keeper change, then we would make
I would say even if I knew exactly which one
it's
you were doing,
fast.
The rebate would be the same. It's
okay.
a matter of whether we change the fee structure going forward.
Okay. Are there any other questions? So do I have a motion to approve?
Yes. Move to approve the rebate.
Second. And to readdress
second.
It.
And to readdress it in March.
Okay. And John, were you the second?
Yes, please.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. That carries. Okay. Item number 5 is review and approve topics for the March retreat.
It says March 20th, 2017, but this is obviously to plan for the when it normally happens in March 2018, so I apologize for that. You'll notice at the bottom of the memo, we're proposing to do our annual investment policy statement review, do some external benchmarking and comparing the city's plan features with other comparable plans. And it seems like that's been brought up a lot, including auto-enroll, opt-out, auto-escalation options, and industry trends around those topics. And then review and discussion of the stable value fund structure and benchmark.
So given the fact that we'll have at least 2 new members, I'm wondering if there should be more like a orientation kind of focus or...
I generally do an orientation with them off. Line the,
mm-hmm.
the 2 new members and have a packet that go over, but maybe we can roll in the investment policy statement review topic, roll in fiduciary responsibilities as it relates to that? Or do you want to add a 4th topic?
I think it's a good refresher
okay.
for folks.
Like your role on
right.
the ECAC. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. So we'll add that as a 4th topic. Any questions?
Any other suggestions? Donna? No?
Have a good time.
Yeah, I don't want to go out of order, but you see on number 7, we were thinking that since the March meeting is kind of hefty with the budget, and we will hopefully have 2 new people, but if we don't,
mm-hmm.
we don't want to go through the whole retreat in education.
Right.
We're not here yet, so we were going to entertain a motion after our next discussion to move it to June. So we have the focus in March on the budget, and then the focus on June would be the retreat and the new member orientation. But something to think about.
Okay. So if nobody has any other suggestions, is this review and approve? So we need a motion.
Move to approve the retreat topics
Kay.
For 2018 on whichever day we decide.
Thank you.
With Julia's amendment?
Okay. Oh, yeah, with my adding the fiduciary.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Moving right along. Okay. Item number six, review and approve RFP committee recommendations for investment and administrative services for a defined contribution fund.
I know even though it's being recorded, we thought it would just be easier to have the conversation without that way here, so everybody could speak freely on questions. So
well, could we have problems with recording at this point in time? Just the okay, so as you know, we go through an RFP process for investment and administration services periodically. It's typically 3 years with a couple 1 year extensions allowed. The there was a evaluation committee that was had members from HR, finance, Office of Retirement Services, and a designated DCAC rep from the police. The new members to that committee didn't know what they were getting into as they received the boxes of thick binders with the 100 plus questions being responded to, and I think it's a little overwhelming the first time you go through that process, but there was a commitment from everybody that was involved to carry forward and do their best. The recommendation coming out of the analysis was to retain Voya. I'll get into some of the detail, but obviously they're very familiar with you, so you don't have any transition issues. They're familiar with the participants. Their quote in the way we looked at it ended up being the lowest. They are every time you've gone through this bid, you've lowered fees, and the first time we took you through it, it lowered it a lot, and then it's been incremental improvements each time. Their bid, you should know, does not include having a local office. It doesn't really change how they service you, but it was more in line with what we were seeing with some of the other bids. So the recommendation was to go with Voya. It would reduce fees by roughly $194,000 per year, close to $1 million in a 5-year look, and that grows as the assets grow. If you go in ahead to the second page at the bottom, the bidders that the main proposers were Voya, Empower, ICMA, -RC, Prudential, and Nationwide, who are all credible bidders. So each of them, as a plan administrator for public funds, had the requisite credentials. I would tell you that some required their bid required use of their stable value funds. That was ICMA and Nationwide, and Empower and Prudential had flexibility but better pricing if you used their funds. If you go ahead to the following page at the top, the evaluation criteria and weights are shown. Each committee member had to do an evaluation on those criteria and come up with a score, and then you'll see the aggregate scoring later on. But we did have a meeting where we reviewed all the proposals. I had comments on the proposals. There was a lot of discussion about the stable value fund. The last time we went through this process, the discussion on stable value fund was important because it was quote, underwater because the market value of underlying assets was less than the book value. That is not an issue today, but it was more the structures of different stable value fund vendors. One variable for Voya that you should know is they had three different scenarios, and some others did also, on pricing for stable value fund structures based upon the quality guidelines that were given for the stable value fund. It also became clear in the process, and this is something we've sort of brought up to you in the past, that they have a little bit more in the lower quality bonds than some of the competitors, and they propose different ways to improve that. So that would be a discussion item that we'd want to follow through. If we move to June, I'd still probably want to do this in March as an agenda item, as to which stable value fund structure you go with. But one of the key reasons, if you flip ahead till you start seeing tables, two more pages, that we looked at, and there were lots of asterisks, but basically we tried to get an administrative fee quote from each vendor, and some of them, it was based upon whether you use their stable value fund or the other. And then it became apparent that some were quoting a potentially low fee on the administration because their stable value fund had a high fee and you were required to go with their stable value fund. So the under the bar chart is the estimated fees on the current level of assets on your stable value fund assets, and then we added the admin fees to the stable value fees to get an aggregate fee. And to us, that gave a better true look as to what the total fees, different comparative fees were. You might ask, why didn't we do this with all the other investment options? And that's because everybody had flexibility on those other options. The only one that was mandatory from one firm to another was to use kind of their stable value fund. So this was kind of the equalizer look. And in this look, you can see that Voya was the lowest. Empower was next if you use their stable value fund product, followed by Prudential if you use their stable value fund product. So that was a way to get an apple-to-apple comparison. The next page has the table of evaluation results. So this is the rolled together votes from each of the committee members and what the averages were, and Voya followed by Empower were the top vote getters. Now this does not include the fact that everybody was rated regardless of whether the legal review had problems with the contracts. And the I'm trying to see where we put that. If
we the exceptions to the
page six.
It would be back a few pages to initial evaluation and elimination. Back. Keep going.
Yeah, in the middle of page three.
Okay, right there. Mm-hmm. So everybody sort of met the qualifications, but they were supposed to review the proposed contract language that the city has. Only Voya had no exceptions to the contract language. Nationwide would require negotiating ownership of material terms and insurance exceptions, and would require further review, and Empower, PRU, and ICMA, all proposed exceptions deemed to be too risky for the city that would require approval by the city council. So that would be another step if it was deemed that one of them was the best bidder. But it's sort of clean with Voya that they made a blanket, no exceptions statement. So the recommendation is to retain Voya. It does result in some, that they were the lowest cost provider. Obviously, you know them well, and there were no legal contract issues with them. There's any questions I can answer?
Just a couple questions. So on, say, ICMA Nationwide, we're looking at the estimated plan fees, they show up lower there, and then you're saying that the stable value fund. So how much did the stable value fund fee represent of the total assets? It's $221 million. So is that $221 million out roughly $1 billion?
Yeah, you're not at that billion mark.
Well, we're nudging. All right, so we're getting close.
It's easier to do the math.
Right.
All right, so that's...
But every other fund that you have, any of them would take that fund.
Okay.
So that wouldn't change based upon who was the plan administrator.
Okay, all right. So just, so it's around mm-hmm. a quarter of the funds there. Okay.
Sure,
Fair enough. And then just kind of, if you just go into why they were rated lower on the investment and fees, which was like 30% there, is substantially lower than, say, Voya. I'm just curious.
Who's that?
For, say, ICMA and Nationwide, why they're substantially lower. Voya gets like a 4.9, and then ICMA gets a 2.8 and a 3.3 for Nationwide. I'm just curious how those scores came about.
Well, I think they were looking at the combined dollars and deciding individually if it's a $100,000 difference, how much of a point drop is that? If it's $50,000, how much is it? And some people put more weight on the stable value, some put more weight on the plan administration. I don't have the personal
sure.
look through on how the individual votes came through. Right.
That's just curious.
No, it's a good question.
I'm sorry.
Well, and some of them had fees like participant fees
mm-hmm.
that's not summarized here as far as how much for loan initiation.
That's true.
How much for DRO administration. That would have been participant fees, not a fee for the plan. And some were higher than others in that area, but that's not
good point.
Yeah, almost all of them had
all of them had
pretty.
Mm-hmm. Some of them had pretty high fees.
Is this unusual to see this much of a disparity between all these companies that are bidding? It's unusual.
No, I think this is typically what we might see.
Because it's pretty wide, would you say? I mean,
it is.
I mean, it's like sometimes you look back and say, "Is everyone looking at the same thing?" I mean,
it well, the biggest numbers are administratively, a plan administrator will have their own stable value fund structure. It is easier to record keep than somebody else's. So that's a huge cost to be able to track and follow and get daily pricing on. So that's part of the issue there. A mutual fund, they just call up on their system and they have the daily pricing automatically, so it's a breeze regardless of mutual funds. But I think there's a desire not only from a plan administration difficulty perspective to use to get you to use their own stable value fund, but it's also a profitability thing. If they can get you to use theirs, it's a little bit more profitable.
Yeah. Jamal, is your question about the range of fees or the range of the scores or the range of the prices?
I was saying just total, just the range total in its
yeah.
totality. But see what he's saying. It breaks down. I'm kind of clear. I just wanted to hear.
Yeah, because the other thing is, I think he mentioned briefly that Voya, you know, they have a local office, and they're planning to close that, and that is an expense to them. But other bidders didn't include the reps being here. So Voya has made a commitment that they would still have the reps present to meet with everybody face-to-face, even though they won't keep their office open because that's a big expense to them. But some of the other bidders didn't include the same level of on-site representation,
right,
which is an expensive piece. So that would also, you know, make the prices not comparable. So.
I just have one other data point here. Under ICMA, under local business, they're the only one that has the score there. Could you just talk about that a little bit?
Well, and so Voya has one now, but they intend to close it, assuming that it's acceptable and that they win the bid. So the other ones don't have, they're too large or they don't have a local office.
So what does what does the local business represent?
Yeah, you have to be, in order to get that 5 points, you have to be located in Santa Clara County.
Okay.
So ICMA must have, where's their
local? I thought it has to be in the city of San Jose.
No,
it's the whole county. So
they have an office
in San Jose.
Okay, so that's what that is. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
But it can't be just like, you know, the printer they used. We've had people try to flip through things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have to have an office. And
so where is ICMA's? They have
I don't know. I've talked to the woman on the phone so many times, I don't know exactly where.
Okay. And where will Voya be servicing the account from? Where is their, like, the account reps that come here, where is their home base going to be?
They didn't tell us exactly. That's the question we can ask them.
It wouldn't be the same people servicing.
Right. I'm
right.
just wondering where are they
they're
going to be.
Sort of.
But right now they don't use that office. They either sit in HR when they're in HR, they sit in PD, they sit wherever.
Right. But if they're home base, where are they going to be commuting? You know, because they're not here on site every day. So I was just wondering how far away they'll be.
Because Bishop's in Sacramento.
They generally are visiting sites every
day. Every day.
Yeah. I really don't think it changes because I don't think they're using the office that they're paying for right now.
Does anybody have any other questions? So the action, let's see. So the recommendation is to approve the selection of Voya for the investment administrative services and direct staff to develop the agreement be effective October 1, 2018 through September 2019. So it's only a one-year agreement with one-year options?
The city only lets you, it's supposed to be a five-year agreement, but the city likes you to commit 1 year at a time, right? So we could, why don't we write that?
That's how all the contracts, they start at 1 year and then there's five options to renew.
The budget is only 1 year, so we do five-year contracts.
Yeah,
but
you just
really
do it subject to appropriation.
Yeah.
This is how we've done it before.
So we could definitely take feedback on doing the first chunk of years and a larger 3 years.
And not have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, generally I see three-year agreements with 2 one-year options.
Okay.
So this is a max five?
Than having to do it every year. Okay.
And it's subject to budget.
Yeah, and then it's subject to budget appropriation, which is like really kind of silly.
Because there's no budget.
There's really no budget. It's really a fee driven. I mean, there are no assets, then there is no Voya. I think in terms of just, If you want a company to feel like if they're going to invest, then they know that if they're going to make some, you know, capital investments or human capital investments, if they know they have a 3-year agreement, then it just gives them more sense of
security.
And the termination clauses are usually
in
the city's
favor. Why don't we do
favor.
A 5-year agreement?
Well, generally it's like those option periods. And I don't know, is there anything in here that gives them any change in the fee structure? No?
No incremental COLA?
I feel like, didn't we just do our EAP contract for a full 5 years?
I guess you could talk with the Suzanne and
mm-hmm.
see. I mean, I personally don't have an issue with a 5-year agreement. It's just easier to kind of signal the end of a period, especially if things aren't going well, that, you know, if you're going to...
You may not extend the option.
Yeah,
it
might
mm-hmm.
not extend.
Okay.
But...
So we will change this to say direct session with the option to renew in 2 1-year agreements. So a 3-year agreement with the option
cuts
to
down
renew.
On
yeah.
Or
could
you know, cut
do
down
the
on administrative work as well.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah.
We just avoid.
Are we in the 5-year cycle and this is just one of the 1-year extensions? Or
No.
This is
okay.
the end. We did an extension and. That's why we're doing
so. We're starting
RFP.
A new cycle.
Yeah.
So it should
all
be
new cycle.
Historically, at least a 3-year then, right?
Yeah. That's
could
yeah.
we do the motion to say up to 5 years, or do you feel more comfortable with 3? So that way we would have the leeway with legal to go from 3 to 5. I would prefer 3.
I mean, I'm okay with a 5-year agreement if other people are.
I'm okay too. So we'll just say so.
Up to 5 years,
up
and then
five.
You'll come back with
whatever
either
terms. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Are other people okay with that?
Yeah.
Jamal?
No problem.
Okay. So
yeah.
Should we? Then I guess we want a motion to accept staff recommendation with the language to come back with a up to a 5-year
mm-hmm.
agreement. So that would take you through September of 2024, right? That'd be 5 years.
Yep.
I would just like to clarify what or understand why there was 1 year. We went from 3 years to 1 year. Is there some reason for that? Or
yeah. So we have attorneys that we have benefit contracts and we have third comp contracts and we have different attorneys, and so there's a mindset that in the benefit side, because deferred comp right now has the committee has the authority to negotiate contracts, but
mm-hmm.
on our other benefit contracs, we have to go to council and subject to budget appropriations, so it's annual. So I think we get tripped up in the language sometimes of, we really can only commit to 1 year, but we're still doing a multi-year agreement. So now that I relook at this, we really should have said five-year agreement,
mm-hmm.
but like I said, it's kind of it's a different opinions on how many options and how many is the original agreement. It's not there isn't any like hard fast rule about how you do it, other than for the city budget process, you can only commit to the first year in terms of the dollars for that 1 year.
Yeah, and usually the way you get around that is you can have a multi-year agreement. It's just it says subject to council appropriation. So if the council doesn't appropriate to spend the money on the contract, then the contract terminates. So you can have multi-year
agreements.
So
does the council have any money on this contract?
No.
No. No.
All right. So it's just their opinion, and it's really our authority.
Right.
5 years sounds good to me.
Okay.
And I did my math wrong. It would be 2023, right? It would be the 5-year.
Yes.
Right? 1920.
Inclusive.
Okay.
So we'll still say up to it so that we can still make sure it's okay with legal.
Okay. So do we have a motion on that?
I motion.
Okay. John, second?
Second.
Okay. Dan, all those in favor?
Aye.
I just say, really want to thank Don for his help on this. I think they really helped us through the RFP process. They did really good summaries. How this focused our discussion on key issues, which was really helpful, and I think it made it go a lot faster, a lot easier, I think. So just thank you.
I'll pass the thanks over to staff.
No,
because there were key issues that I was not as good at.
I like that combined thing, and then putting in there that $221 million fund as part of the analysis of it, because that would have some impact.
Okay. Okay. So item number 7 is discuss rescheduling planned retreat to June meeting based on new member assignment. So that's a verbal, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that probably is a wise idea because nothing ever happens on the time frame that we think where it's going to happen on.
Well, we actually were also thinking just because the retreat is a longer chunk of time in the agenda, as is the budget. So to put those always in the same time, I guess I would suggest that we do that in the future, that we always have it on the June meeting. But that's just.
And we're the third Monday of the month?
Mm-hmm. With the exception of December, we move
it
up to the second.
Unless June is busy for vacations and things.
June's.
It's up to you, because the committee has to spend the longer time on the meeting with the retreat, because we always attach it on to after whatever the regular agenda is. Unless we want to do it a whole other way. So that's
for what it's worth, I don't think I can make the March 19th meeting.
Okay.
You were talking about just moving the retreat, not the March 19th.
Correct,
yeah.
Correct. And I know Julie plans to be here. March 1, so we shouldn't have a problem with the quorum, even if we don't have the new members. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
But in case that we don't have the new members for March, for those of you that are still on the committee, please make sure you let us know if you can't make the meetings, because we don't want to have it and not have a quorum and not be able to approve the budget. We'd have to reschedule. So we already know you can't, but if one of the others of you can't, even if you find out, you know, a few days before, we'd appreciate the heads up.
That would put us not at a quorum.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What's a quorum? 5?
4.
But
Julie told me she'll be here, and if for any reason she can't, she'd probably send Kelly.
Okay, so
okay.
More than 50%.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm okay moving the retreat to June. If you could just send out those calendar items, because they're not on the calendar yet.
Yeah.
So. Okay. So that's. So I just. The 19th. I think.
Yeah, March 19th is the next.
Okay.
Would be the third Monday.
June meeting would be June 18th.
Yeah.
Sounds right.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds like a plan.
Great. Do you need to motion or just take your direction?
No,
as
can't.
The chair?
Oh,
we can't motion.
Discuss.
Okay. We can't motion because I didn't.
Yeah, you just said discuss. So we discussed it. So you can take our discussion and do what you want.
Okay.
Ignore it.
Always put my direction.
Yes. We can always put. Okay. So we direct you to do that.
Thank you.
So okay. So item number 8 is staff update. Any updates?
Yeah. So one update is I wanted to let you know that we're going to be sending out calendar invites for all the 2018 meetings, and we'll. Put the retreat now on June. We just wanted to solidify that, and we can now book our meeting rooms since the state has passed. We already talked about it a bit, but there's 2 seats expiring March 1st, so we will be we're recruiting now for the AFSCME position and the management position here. And I think that's it.
And Dawn requested the one agenda item from the retreat to move to the March meeting, which was it the stable value? You want to make sure we discuss?
Yeah, that would be.
Okay, yeah, so we'll pull that off of the retreat topic, put it on the March meeting.
March agenda, right.
Yeah. And then Emily already said it, reminder, let us know if you can't make a meeting. Please look out for those training emails.
So the reimbursement and the stable value, we'll talk about in March. Right.
Well, the
sorry,
reimbursement,
we
got
a motion to reimburse.
Yeah, we got a motion to reimburse, but we're going to then look at
the fee structure.
The fee structure
and
based
how
on the RFP.
The impact will be based.
Yeah.
You bring the VOIA agreement back in March?
Do you think we'll have it ready that fast?
I'm not sure.
March
my
or
first
June.
Round.
It'll be June.
It'll be June. I'm going to shoot for March. I'm going to shoot of having
okay.
our seats filled by March and having the contract.
Okay.
But
okay.
as you said, some things take
longer than.
Yeah.
So. Okay. Okay, so is that it on staff update?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 9 is stable value renewal rate. So
yeah, so everyone got the email I sent
okay.
out on Friday. The stable value rate actually decreased a bit. It's down to 2.49.
Item number 10 is the 2017 NAGDA conference recap.
So I put this memo together really for committee members to read and try to garnish as much learning as possible without being there. It's a very, I know it's a lengthy memo and very detailed, but it has some good suggestions, and that's what prompted the retreat topic that I suggested, that number 2. We did have one member go. Thank you, John, for attending. I know that you had some tech issues.
The worst thing was not having standard electrical outlets in any of the conference rooms.
Yeah. Hmm. But we appreciate your attendance there, and I know that you gained a lot of insight and knowledge.
Yeah, I think the main thing is that it is throughout the country they're saying that their pension plans are insufficient. And they're recommending everyone to go into the deferred comp. In Milwaukee, they increased their participation rate from, I think, 60 to 80%. And they're using a behavioral economics, I guess is one thing, or behavioral engineering. What all that means is that you have the default choice as have new hires and employees opt in and to explain to them at the time what they're getting into, and then it's their choice to opt out, and then also buy in from the top, and then they would communicate what the director of HR did for City of Milwaukee. She would go out to all the different job sites, different shifts, and communicate this to the employees, and that increased their participation from 60 to 80% or so. The other point would be that there are law firms out there mirroring private sector pension issues and throwing out lawsuits to see what sticks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's happening.
Any other? Thank you very much. We have that for our records.
Mm-hmm.
Then, number 11 is legislative and regulatory update. Seems like it's a moving target in D.C. these days.
Mm-hmm.
It was back and forth on the retirement contribution limit. Where is that item? I know at one point there was some talk about reducing the amount that people could set aside in their 401. And their 457s.
That has gone back to where it was, and the the catch up moved up $500 for those that a catch up applies to. So, in aggregate, it actually has moved slightly up.
Because I think at one of the earlier. Things batting back and forth was to significantly reduce the amount that employees. I was kind of scratching my head on that one.
I think the most recent thing was related to special catch-ups
mm-hmm.
and catch-up provisions and pulling them out altogether
mm-hmm.
within the tax-exempt markets. And I think that was as of Thursday. that that was pulled off the table. So right now, I believe last I heard, kind of, I want to say revenue, but it's, I guess, impact neutral at this point for governmental plans.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear, because you shouldn't be discouraging people from saving for retirement, given all of the information that's out there that nobody's saving enough, right?
Right.
So. Yeah, the annual limit did go up by $500, and a payroll flyer went out on Friday for that. Yeah.
Okay.
Including the 50 catch-up and the 3-year catch-up.
Great. Page one, just an update on these state retirement plans, which are aimed at private sector employers that don't have a plan for their employees. Oregon was ahead of the game on most of the other states, and I think some states are learning from them, but California's program design is supposed to be effective in the fall of 2018. The ERIC, or the ERISA Industry Committee, did file a complaint in Oregon in October because of the compliance burden to try to monitor, and it has pushed out some of the dates. I have clients that are public sector, I have clients that are private, and they are stunned by some of this compliance. As an example, I have a company that's pharmaceutical retail that's got drug stores throughout the country, and to register all their individual sites, this could be a Safeway store, this could be a Rite Aid, it could be whatever, they are sending registration forms to each of these sites, what comes in the mail has a special code that you have to know to go online to file an exemption that it doesn't apply to you. And companies can't track down all these letters because the employees in the different places are thinking it's junk mail or something, or they don't know where to give it to. So it's from a, how do you actually enroll and say it doesn't apply? It's just very difficult, and it hasn't been thought through very well. And so the rollout is being very complicated. The next page, the DOL appealed the ruling invalidating the overtime rule in the Obama administration. They tried to update the increase the minimum salary threshold for white-collar exemptions. The Texas judge said that invalidated the rule, saying you couldn't have an arbitrary dollar amount, that it was the role of the employee was more important, and the DOL's filed a notice to appeal that. I think the biggest issue is it could potentially impact compensation, retirement plans that have compensation-based benefits. Disaster relief, there's two pages, 3 and 4, because the first came through, and I think you're well aware of this, there was a lot of flexibility built into hardship withdrawals and loan availability to make it easier for people that were having these disasters in their areas. The following page took it a step further, in particular on loans, just added to the flexibility on the loan options. Based upon all the wildfires going on in California, the list could grow as to what goes on here. And as alluded to on a litigation update, it seems like 9 out of 10 lawsuits out in the defined contribution marketplace, whether it's corporate, public, or foundation and endowment, has fees as part of the lawsuit complaints. And some of these have been falling more in the plan sponsor favor in recent time. The Jacobs versus Verizon, the fee complaint was dismissed. I would note the bottom line there that Verizon couldn't escape the claim that it failed to monitor and remove a poor performing fund. So it was a continual reminder that fiduciary, I won't say this for the retreat, fiduciary roles involve are very process oriented. So you have to follow the process of due diligence, and then they're very documentation oriented. You have to document that you were doing things. So
Verizon dropped the ball?
Verizon dropped the ball, and actually, you could have a high cost option, but if you just have to document that there's other factors as to why you would keep that option in the plan and that you've been monitoring it. Sandoval versus Novatex was another fee-related one, and that one was recently filed, so we'll see where that goes. As a follow-up on the fiduciary rule that came out in the summer, there is having some impact. Wells Fargo has changed their structure. They used to have a, quote, fiduciary group that would charge, quote, flat fees, like I might quote, and then they would have their broker group that would do a more broker-type fee structure, and individual or entities out in the marketplace might not know which arm of Wells Fargo they were really doing with and whether they were taking on a fiduciary role or not. They might not have been sophisticated enough to know. So Wells Fargo has clarified that, so everybody's falling under the same rule at this point. One of the initial long-standing cases out in the marketplace has been Tibble versus Edison, and it did find a $13 million settlement against Edison for breaching his fiduciary rules. That started out higher than that. It was more like $29 million in the initial one, they also had high-cost mutual funds. One of their violations, not to get too specific about this, was their policy statement. And when we've done your policy reviews, we've often talked about flexibility, having enough substance in there in the policy to provide guidance, but not tying your hands. And their policy actually had written in it that they would pick the lowest cost option. Mm. So it didn't matter how terrible the option was, they actually said they would pick the lowest cost. And at one point they changed their default option from a Vanguard balance fund that was low cost to a Fidelity target date series that was higher cost, because Fidelity recommended it to them without doing a search, and that's part of the violation of not only of policy, but prudent process. There are what are called stock drop cases, where companies used to match contributions with their company stock. It's less frequent today, but then if the stock dropped precipitously in value, participants were losing a lot of value, and they weren't sometimes able to move away from that match. So companies have responded to that by by changing their procedures quite a bit, but a lot of the company stock drop cases have actually favored the plan sponsor of as long as they follow the proper due diligence process of how they offered the company stock. Not that they're not stopping. And then what's happening on the Hill on the next page, we'll see on the defined contribution plans how it, whether it does come out, but it looks like they've backed away from what a lot of the initial things they were talking about. The hardship distributions, they were making those easier to take. And this was inserted originally in the House bill, and it's likely going to remain. And the corporate tax rates and exec comp changes are still in. So we will have to see what the final shakeout looks like. So quick update there. Any questions?
So, yes, the ERISA stuff, that applies only to the private sector, is that correct?
Yeah, the a lot of public funds have tried to model themselves after ERISA,
right.
But it's not mandatory.
Right.
And a lot of the fee lawsuits started with the big corporate plans, but then they went into the public and they went into the foundations of schools. And most of the largest universities have had a lawsuit against them. They've been the way they've managed their programs is not as disciplined as corporate America or public America. But the fact that you go out to bid, get competitive bids, and I think that's, you know, that's all tied into the fiduciary process, and the plans that get sued may not have reviewed fees in 15, 20 years.
Wow.
Can I just throw one thing in? I don't want to be an alarmist, but especially for people like Dan who are about to retire. But the state of Oregon this last session included within a transportation tax bill a new tax on distributions from 457 plans as well as other vehicles, annuities and the like. So it's one basis point. It's very deep within this bill. Doesn't start till 2018, but I think as you all know, once legislatures find a new avenue for revenue, it kind of spreads pretty quickly. So we'll be watching that internally as to where it goes. But I just wanted to give everybody that heads up. It could be something that comes to California as well.
I'm surprised it didn't start in California first.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you.
Yeah. So it becomes part of like their state tax.
Correct.
It
ends up being a state tax on systematic withdrawals that are taken.
But there also were rumors a few years ago that there were rumblings about the IRS deciding to take away the ability of 457 participants to take money out without, retirement, without any penalty.
Yeah.
Because right now, if you're in the private sector in 401k and you leave, you have to pay penalties.
Yeah, pay 20%.
And 457, you don't. But they've been talking for a few years about getting that too.
Oh, putting an age. A minimum age for a distribution without a penalty, right?
Mm-hmm. As opposed to just a time of separation, which we are lucky to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that.
It's a big benefit.
We can take loan out of 457 also.
Mm-hmm. Not in all plans, though.
Not in all
in
plans?
Not all plans allow that. Right?
Good point.
Okay. Okay, so number 12 is verbal update on deferred compensation plan revenue reimbursement report, August to October.
So So given your direction at the last meeting, we found a way to make it a little bit easier to read, and basically we got rid of all the, it's still not really great on the screen, is it? But at least in your hands, it's a little bit easier than before. We got rid of all the superfluous information and stuff that doesn't need to be there. So you can see now a little bit more clearly that for July through September, or let's go January through September, you had roughly an average of about $157,000 in revenue. And then for October to December right now, just October, because the November numbers weren't in, $55,000 in revenue credited back to the plan. And that just seems a little bit off.
That's just October.
Yeah, just October, but yeah, still, yeah, still seems a little bit low. But anyway, we'll double check that. But hopefully that's a little easier to see.
That would be 165.
It stayed the same, yeah.
Format okay versus doing it on legal? Or do you still want it?
Yeah, that's fine. If you just do the gray a little lighter.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
Sorry.
Okay. No.
So
yeah.
This is just the month of October?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just October.
Just October. So
yeah, no.
So it's probably pretty close
pretty
then
close.
If you added another.
165.
Yeah. Okay, number 13, Voya Portfolio Review, July through September.
So you have a copy of the portfolio review. I'm going to just hit the highlights, kind of as I've done in the past. On page 5, just a reminder that the objective of the portfolio is outperform the Barclays Capital Intermediate Aggregate Bond Index on a rolling 3-year basis. So that's kind of the bogey as we move forward. On page 6, you see a summary of the performance and actions that the plan, or I should say the fund, took on your behalf. The duration, as you'll see in a future slide, stayed roughly the same, in line with the 4-year duration guideline limit in the portfolio itself. In the corporate securities, we actually added to that position. Again, all these will be outlined a little bit later. No change to the agency RMBS category. In the non-agency RMBS category, we again trimmed our exposure a little bit there as well in the quarter. And then agency-backed securities, we continued to maintain an overweight to that category, as well as still overweighted the commercial mortgage-backed securities that you'll see again in the future slides as well. On the next slide, just gives you a quick glimpse of the performance of the portfolio for the quarter, 0.98 basis points versus 0.72, so outperformed the benchmark by 0.26. And then year to date, we're outperforming the benchmark by 1.08% as well. And the next slide gives you the characteristics of the portfolio. We're just going to concentrate on the upper right-hand chart. Again, talking about the duration, you know, the benchmark has a 4.13 effective duration. Our portfolio has a 3.89 period of duration. Yield to maturity, 2.73, which exceeds the benchmark. And then average quality in your fund does is less than the benchmark, and that's because of the desire to gain outperformance and hopefully yield a little bit of higher rate of return. And then the yield to worst, 2.34 versus 2.71 for the benchmark. So all good numbers overall. The next slide, actually I'm just going to focus on the top half. That just shows you where your quality ratings are. The benchmark is in gray, portfolio is in orange, so you can see the benchmark holds a little bit more in treasuries and cash than we do, also holds more in the triple A category than we do, and then in double A is about the same, but then triple B and under triple B we hold more than the benchmark does as well. And then the benchmark has some non-rated categories which we don't have. The asset allocation is on page 10, and it gives you a breakdown by asset group. But you can see on the far right-hand side of the page, that change for prior quarter ties back into that earlier slide on page 6, where you can see the changes in the holdings agency mortgages decreased by 10%. A reduction of 1% in emerging markets and government-related securities, and then 6% in the aggregate corporates, I believe is that that is, minus one in non-agency RMBS, and then the increase overall went into treasuries and cash during that quarter as well. And then the last page to highlight, really page 11, a few changes within the team, and I know you're going to do an update on the stable value fund in the future, so when probably be Sean Benaya and Tony Camp, when they come out, they'll highlight the overall changes that have occurred in the past year to the management team, different philosophies that have come forth as well. And then the final pages, basically 12 and onward, are just a listing of the portfolio itself and the securities that are held. Any questions?
Yeah, I just have a couple questions on the triple D range 15 and the less than triple B is 8.4.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm more concerned about the risk associated with those. Can you talk about the risk on those? And if you can give me an idea what the performance is for those funds in those areas?
I can't speak to the performance on the funds. That kind of exceeds my bandwidth for
okay.
sure in that category. But I can tell you the reason that we hold more assets in triple B or less than triple B is that Ag Plus part of the strategy. We're trying to exceed the benchmark, and in doing so, the portfolio allows us to dip down, I guess down market, down category, if you will, into riskier categories that will, in hopes, return higher alpha and give you a higher credited rate overall. But that's
in
that
do
reason.
Do you have like,
so. Sorry, Don?
Safety valves in there, or just something changes, and it's like, okay, it's time to get out of this particular fund, or?
Well, they're actively managed, so
okay.
the portfolio team is constantly looking at that, and
okay.
then your contract with us only allows us to have a certain amount of exposure to each category as well.
Fair enough.
So, I'm sorry, Don.
And that's one of the things we're going to talk about at the March meeting is whether to change the guidelines for the state.
Yeah, because I don't see that you have any state or local taxable. There's no taxable muni debt in the stable value fund.
I don't believe so. I'd have to check with the portfolio.
Yeah,
managers,
I was just
but
skimming through and I didn't
yeah,
see it.
I wouldn't think so.
We used to never see it, and occasionally it'll pop up in a portfolio here and there.
Yeah, I sold $1.3 billion last week of taxable muni debt for the city, so it's out there. So, it might be something to think of, you know, think about, because there is more coming into the market just because,
mm-hmm.
especially now with a lot of the restrictions being placed on the tax-exempt side. What? Those bonds were rated. They were a senior sub, double A and double A minus. So
okay.
they were clearly within the credit.
Yeah.
Money.
I'll check with Sean and see what he says.
Yeah, there's a lot of it out there now.
Okay.
The city has about 16 to 17% of our portfolios in taxable munis. And they have a very low default rate.
Okay.
Very low.
Send them to talk to you.
Okay. So the next item is, anybody have any other questions on this? Okay. So number 14, review Voya monthly activity reports for August, September, and October.
So you have the three activity logs before you, both for the main plan and the Part 10 plan. Just two things I think to point out to you, unless you had any other questions, but on the second page, middle of the top chart there, you'll see at the end, we had changed that. As you recall, we had been tracking the total number of loans as well as all the loan amounts over the lifetime of our relationship with you, and then as a result of the RFP process and discussions last time, we changed that to be the total number of outstanding loans. So you
okay.
can see if 500, as of the end of August, 546 loans with $13.1 million in total outstanding amounts there as well. The other thing to point out is the data for this with regards to the utilization of services right above that orange bar on loan activity for customer service. All those factors get generated by a plan review that we have. That's the annual plan review that you normally see. They've just changed that process, and in the course of creating these documents for you, I've noticed in this plan and then looking at others that the customer service, that is the 800 number call-ins, are way down, and it's not just your plan. So internally, they're looking to see what's happened to this new document or a plan review document that they've created and why it's not properly capturing the number of calls into the service center. So that number is admittedly probably way low, probably at least a couple hundred low is my guess. But anyway, we'll see what's going on there and figure out how it needs to be adjusted.
I probably need more than 2 calls.
Yeah, 12 calls for the quarter or for the month is much. Other than that, I didn't have anything else to point out. I think the numbers are consistent with what Jennifer had highlighted in her report earlier. And I think that would be it.
So do you think there's any kind of marketing push or something that you could do to get this, encourage increased plan participant or increasing deductions to get to that $1 billion?
Yeah, I forgot on my staff update, and I don't know if you guys were prepared, but
I was not.
I'm in touch with the marketing guy with Voya, mm-hmm. and we did a campaign, a boost campaign. It was a little guy with a plane on the beach. And we did really good. We had really good results compared to most outreach, and I'm not a marketing person, so bear with me. But Voya sent emails to anyone that they have email addresses for and then mailed out the paper flyers to anyone they didn't have email addresses for. And we had 169 participants increase their deferrals. We targeted 3,609 participants. So that was 4.7 increase their deferral amounts, totaling a little bit over 34,000. And Jason said that was for the period, so that will continue to grow for us. So there was positive results. There was some that did decrease as well, but at least it means they're thinking about it and they're being reminded to look at their contributions, which I think is good either way, right? Like, even if our plan isn't gaining. But most of them are a good portion of the 213 actions.
But also as a result of the percent contribution ability that we now have, we should see some increases.
Yeah. And people are using that percent. I mean, now I'm working with our payroll system because people are putting 100% or 90% for people that maybe have second incomes or something.
Oh.
And so we're working with our payroll system to figure out how to get that to work properly. But yeah, people are using the percent option for sure.
And we did talk about a couple years ago, John, about instigating an auto enroll or auto escalation for PD, I think it was. So if we want to start back up that conversation, we would just need to contact the PD or FIRE. I know you guys have the two highest participations in enrollment anyway, but it's a way, if they were willing as an individual bargaining unit to allow that, because I think it would have to be bargained for every union to be able to start doing that. But so think about it.
I did send an email to the mayor expressing my frustrations with remuneration and mentioned that my summary that I recommended auto enroll feature, and he said he'd discuss it with Jennifer Shembry. So I am all for it. I think it's a good idea. It's the thought across the nation that the pension alone is not sufficient. LA County has a 3% auto enroll feature for new hires, and then that goes to 4% the following year and 5% the year after that, so they have auto escalators involved. That might be a bit much for folks here, but I think just get the ball rolling and then you can discuss how much and to increase that over time. Mm-hmm. Might be a smaller bite over time, maybe 1% the first year or something.
Well, all the contracts are open except police.
Right. This is the time. Yeah. In fact, I think this month we, HR, need to give a list to OER of things, so we'll add this.
In September, I think all the other federated end in June 30th.
Yep.
And then from a marketing standpoint, I'm working with Voya to do something quarterly to get participants' eyes and brains on their plan. So the next one will go out in January after the holiday settles. And it's about account access.
And that was something else we discussed, too, was perhaps have not just, you know, orientation, people being waylaid with insurance forms and medical and dental and life insurance and deferred comp, and, you know, maybe have someone go out a month later and remind them that, you know, it'd be a good idea to go into deferred comp. Just
yeah, and we are sending emails to anyone in new who did not sign up that day. Our reps get a pretty high percentage of new hires to sign up that day, and then staff is sending follow-up emails to anyone who did not sign up to say, hey, no pressure, voluntary, but as a reminder, this is there for you. So we're trying to capture them, and then we have Voya reps that are doing brown bags at various locations visiting, and we have open office hours.
Yeah,
so
you say, especially for new hires, if they stay here 35 years and they put $25 a paycheck, assuming 10%. I know it's high, but so would you rather have an expensive cup of coffee over the week or $225,000 at 35 years? So that's kind of eye opening. Go for the caffeine.
Got to be some really good
coffee.
Okay, and then looks like the update on the year-to-date fund performance summary.
Yeah, you have a copy of that as well. This is as of 9:30. Well, you have one for 9, 10, and also for November as well. But no real update on that either.
Okay. Any comments, questions? Okay. So have here the next meeting being Monday, March 19th at 9 o'clock. And then, as we noted, the annual retreat won't be. It will be on June 18th instead. Okay. Open forum, anything? Any unforeseen emergency withdrawal appeals? Nope.
Nope.
So I guess we're ready to adjourn. Thank you, everybody.
Thank
and
you.
Once again, thanks, Dan and Donna, for your
yes.
multiple years of service. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
This year, best. You didn't set a retirement date yet, did you?
Mm-hmm. You can't remember it on the 8th.
Did you set one?
July 12th.
July 12th.
Hopefully you'll have a higher standard than I have, because if no one else will do it, I'll do it.
So, okay, thank you, everybody.
Tag you in.
Oh, yeah. Julia, I have two documents for you to sign.
I know we did a big agency. We refunded.
So Jamal, how many years you have
series
city?
Bonds outstanding. We refunded
yeah.
all of them. We sold them last week.
Oh, you have reciprocity with another city?
I do.
Never
how
done.
May I ask how many?
Four.
Never
oh.
done like this face to face.
No, I'm pushing 26 years
before,
in January.
So we went out and I was the week before.
Yeah. I'm stuck.
I mean, all of them. So we did week before Thanksgiving. I did San Francisco and LA. Week after Thanksgiving,
kind of
I was in Chicago, Boston, New York, and New York.